The last case in our calendar is 06-1944, A. Schulman, Inc. versus William Wilkins, Richard Levin, Tax Commissioner, Mr. Hubbard.
May it please the court, this case is a die exemption case under the personal property tax law. The Board of Tax Appeals erred in two fundamental ways. First, because the items in issue don't qualify as dies, and secondly, because even if they did, the taxpayer did not establish the value associated with these items and therefore failed to meet its affirmative burden of proof on that aspect.
Could these items qualify as a jig?
Your Honor, the Board of Tax Appeals did not so find. They found that the items qualified as dies, and the answer to that is no, they wouldn't. The Board was actually correct with respect to finding that they weren't jigs, because jigs, as this Court has defined in Timken and a number of other cases, are items, special purpose devices, which hold or position a product or a workpiece as the product is being manufactured, and that's not what we have here. So, to answer your question,
this is a Piper. Screw. How you would describe the device that pushes the material through?
I think locomoting or pushing an object or transferring is not holding it or positioning it. And the jig, that's what a jig does. It's a precision instrument that's a special purpose device that's associated with holding and positioning with accuracy, not pushing raw material through a barrel. So there would be no justification under the common meaning of the word jig as it's developed in dictionary or in the industries involved here to draw that conclusion. So the board was correct on that. And notably, there was no attempt by the appellee in this case, A. Schulman, to claim a jig classification. So there's, I wouldn't go so far as they're conceding that, but certainly they're not a proponent at this juncture, at least, to that position. The reason that that these items aren't dies is that this court's jurisprudence clearly defines what a die is. A die is a device which imposes its special shape onto a product as that product is being formed. In this case, the items at issue don't do that. The items at issue here are the screw and barrel assemblies, which are permanent parts, integral parts of the taxpayer's extruder machines. They convey the raw material resin to the point that it's introduced into the die holes. And it's the die itself which imposes its shape onto the product.
And here the dies are not taxed.
That's right, Your Honor.
Now, the BTA makes a factual finding, and generally we defer to those factual findings. Why wouldn't we do so in this case? Why would we not defer to their expertise in their analysis?
Your Honor, that's true that the factual findings of the board are generally deferred to, but in this instance, the factual finding has to do with the functionality of the dies, how they function. That's the finding, that's the duty of the board to make that initial determination. Whether that functionality comports with the definition of a die, that's a legal issue. And that's for this court to consider as a matter of law. And in fact, the taxpayer's brief makes that very distinction between the issue of, okay, what is the function of the particular item under examination? In this case, it's to transport raw material resin, not to impose its shape on the product. Okay, that's an issue for the board. Whether that functionality comports with the definition of a die, that's a legal issue. And this court has always so held, and we would submit that it's pretty darn clear that it doesn't impose its shape on the object. There's another reason why this item doesn't qualify for a die.
Before you get to that, counsel, is this part of the machine?
Yes. The screw and barrel assemblies are permanent parts, integral parts of the machine.
And they are necessary to have them in order that the die work.
That's
but
right.
You don't necessarily need a die to have the screw and barrel work.
Exactly. They're general purpose devices, and that's my next point.
Okay.
Under the law, this court's jurisprudence puts an additional requirement in addition to the fact that in order for an item to be a die, it has to impose its shape on an object, and that is it has to be a special purpose device. These are paradigmatic examples of general purpose devices because they're integral parts of the machine. They're used over and over again. They're not product specific, unlike the dies themselves, which are. The dyes, in order to form any of the colorized plasticized products in different shapes and dimensions, they need different dyes. So the dyes are product specific. They're special purpose devices, whereas the screw and barrel assemblies, which are used as permanent parts of the machine over and over again, no matter what particular product is being produced by A. Shulman, are general purpose devices and therefore don't qualify for that reason, as well as they don't function as dyes.
Is there any factual dispute over the screws? It seems to me that I read somewhere somebody was alleging that they had to be changed in order to fit with the dyes, and I read somewhere else that they didn't have to be changed in order to fit with the dyes. Now, did I not read that, or did I not understand it correctly, or do we have a dispute?
There's no dispute, Justice Cuff, and that's an excellent question, because these items are not as long-lived as the machines itself necessarily. So what we're talking about there is if they need to be refurbished or repaired. You can have a screw, which is an auger, it's rotating, turning, pushing the product, and it can wear out on a machine. But the testimony was very clear that screw and barrel assembly are used for a large variety of dyes. They're not product specific. That's very clear in the record. There's no dispute on that point. But you're right, they don't necessarily ever not get replaced. And we represented in our brief, and I think you might have gotten it from that. But there's no real question as to the integral nature as part of the machine itself. In fact, there was, so I want to make that point. We have special purpose device here. It doesn't function as a die. But I'd like to move on to another point, and it's a serious matter in another way, and that is that they didn't prove, in any event, let's say we ignore the functionality of this and say, yeah, it's a die. We ignore the special purpose requirement and say that doesn't matter either, and say, okay, it qualifies as a die. The taxpayer didn't present any evidence whatsoever, no source documentation, no primary or secondary records, no testimony concerning what the value of these items is, what their cost was. The only thing they had was what they presented to the tax commissioner, the refund claim, where they just simply itemized a various list of items describing very cryptically what these items were and assigned a cost to them. There was absolutely no testimony establishing what these items cost. And there were two price quotes that they provided, estimates. In proceedings before the commissioner, they didn't present them at the board. There was no testimony on them. There's no authentication of them. They were clear hearsay within hearsay. They did not relate to any of the items that were at issue in the case. And they were in the price quotes they gave, one was 10 times higher than the other one for the screw and barrel assemblies.
Isn't your strongest, I hate to make your argument for you, but it seems to me you would be arguing that perhaps in answer to Justice Stratton's question, that the Board of Tax Appeals refer to General Motors Corporation, and they even cite a piece of equipment or tooling that is capable of forming or creating a part, either by pressure or molding techniques. That's clearly not the screw in the barrel. That pushes the soft plastic into the die, and then the die forms the whatever the product is. Isn't that correct? And then they also cite to Colonial Foundry, in which we said the various flask cast iron shapes, weights, and clamps used in the manufacture of iron and alloy castings of special and varying designs exempt from taxation as dies, doesn't seem, and then they say, such is the case before us today. I don't follow that, and I guess I'll ask other opposing counsel, obviously, but isn't that your strongest point, that
yeah, absolutely,
the board just
Your
simply
Honor.
Missed?
And that's what I meant by this court's jurisprudence defining what a die is and applying the special purpose. You're being much more concrete about it and accurately. The very cases that the Board of Tax Appeals cites in purportedly relying on directly refute their conclusions. Absolutely. And the same thing is true of the affirmative burden of proof that they have to establish both the manner and extent of the claimed error. The fact is the board set forth that as the proper affirmative burden of the taxpayer to establish, and then they completely ignore it. So in virtually every way, the board decision on this particular issue is wrong. I would say in defense of the board that this was only one of several issues in the case. Unfortunately, we happen to agree with the commissioner on the other, or with the board on all the other issues.
Spent more time on the other issues, actually.
A lot more time.
Yeah.
And I think, And that's, I think it's fair to say that the taxpayer itself devoted a lot more attention to the other issues, and that maybe explains why there's such a positive evidence in support of their factual, as far as what reduction in taxable value would be warranted if, in fact, these items were dies.
Counsel, I want to come back, as the Chief did, and to what Justice Stratton asked in the first place. And you said, well, they made a legal error. It seems to me that what you're arguing about is they really made a factual error, that they said this is a die when, in fact, the facts don't bear that out in relation to how a die has been described in legal terms. So, but that wouldn't stop us from telling them they're wrong. It's just a higher hurdle.
You're right, Your Honor. I would say that actually what the facts tend to show and the ultimate conclusion that you draw from the facts is a legal matter, and that's what they say in their brief, in distinguishing the cases where this court reversed the board on these die cases. So, I mean, they're saying it's for the board to determine the functionality of it, what is the functionality, and then the court can review that de novo in terms of whether that functionality comports with the definition of die. But I would agree with you. It doesn't mean that we don't get a review of it. You know, the standard of proof would just be different. But in this case, there's no evidence to support what the board did. In fact, the board's citation of the case law and the testimony of the witness, what the board did is they simply quoted from the testimony of the sole witness on this issue. And that testimony was that the screw and barrel assemblies work to convey the raw material resin to the point it's introduced to the die through the rotation of the screw within the barrel.
You could actually disassociate, I don't know how the equipment's set up, but you could actually separate the screw and barrel from the die equipment if you had some other way of putting soft plastic into the die. The die could operate without the screw and barrel, could it not?
That's right. It's just introducing it or getting it to the point. It pushes the raw material resin through the die hole. So it's like a caulking gun. I mean, if you wanted it, you know, the screw recoils when there's sufficient amount of the semi-molten liquid raw material resin, and then just pushes it to the die hole. And it's kind of like spaghetti. It comes out in an extrusion. That's why they call it an extruder machine. But I don't think there's any really serious issue that the functionality of this is not that of a die, nor should there be any serious issue that this is not a special purpose device. And moreover, they didn't establish what the reduction in taxable value would be, even if you were to characterize it that way. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. Mr. Chiwanka.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. In this case, as Mr. Hubbard has explained, the Board of Tax Appeals determined that the equipment at issue met the functionality of a die. I'd like to first address some of the factual characterizations of the equipment and see if we can clarify some matters there. These are barrel assemblies. They do have screws inside of them, and into the barrel is placed the raw materials, these pellets, which are then the screw turns into the barrel. The screw is the same size as the barrel and pushes or forces the raw materials down through openings on the end of the barrel. Okay, these are specifically designed and crafted openings. And that's how you do extrusion molding. That's how you extrude plastic molds. To call that material handling equipment, as the tax commissioner does, I think is a mistake. This is not material or equipment that is bringing material to the line. It's not equipment that is transferring in process product between various steps in the manufacturing line. It's actually doing the production. This is production equipment. And if you go back to the Timken decision, which I think is the leading decision in this area, you know, the court stressed there that, look, we can't come up with one all-encompassing definition of a pattern jig or a die. And that's because manufacturing processes are very different from plant to plant. And there's various different technologies and mechanisms for doing the manufacturing. So what looks like a die in one plant may not look like a die in another plant. And so we have to use a flexible or expanded approach to defining these things and look at them on a case-by-case basis and focus on functionality, not form.
Is there a definition that this court has promulgated of a die that you think this auger and a screw and barrel assembly fits?
Well, I think the definition that was cited by the board in this case and the General Motors decision, which is a piece of equipment that is capable of forming or creating a part either by pressure or molding techniques, I think is an accurate description of the equipment at issue here. This is a plastics molding process that's going on. It's done differently, perhaps, than other types of plastic molding. A lot of people will use a gravity mold where they're pouring something into the mold, letting it set, and then taking it out. And I think a lot of the cases that the board cited in its decision are those kinds of cases. I think the board was basically saying, look, just because this plastic molding company does it differently doesn't mean they don't have dies here. And these pieces of equipment are coming into direct contact with the raw material and physically touching it and forming it and shaping it into the specific end product.
I think the problem is that this was the device used to introduce the liquid resin into a die that would mold it into a kind of a pellet that could be used. Well, it was the introduction phase, I think it was Mr. Hubbard's position, that this only was used to introduce the material, not to form it in a die.
I think the response there is that is a focus on form, not functionality. And I think the board, when they looked at this, they realized this was all one integrated unit. And all of it, the screw, the barrel, and the die plate at the end were all coming together to apply pressure and force to create or squeeze out the final product. And if you think about it in those terms and that functionality, it's really not much different than a stamping die.
Well, counsel, right? I think it was asked of opposing counsel by the chief that if you could use this die in some other way, you wouldn't need this screw and barrel. And he said, yes, that's true, but is there any other way to use a die at the end of this screw and barrel that is meant to have the substance extruded through it without a screw and barrel?
You would need some kind of force or pressure to apply.
And the standard in the industry is to use the screw and barrel mechanism in conjunction with the die in order to form the product. And you cannot use the die in conjunction with any other, I don't want to use the word machine, but any other device but this screw and barrel. And apparently the board then is looking at that as a unit.
Correct.
A die unit.
Correct. And I think the testimony before the board supported that concept, and I think that's why the board cited that testimony, to note that, look, these are all pieces of an integrated unit that are working together to perform a die functionality.
There wouldn't be any functionality to the screw and barrel without the die.
Correct, and vice versa.
Okay.
The General Assembly, as you sure know, is very specific in granting exemptions or exceptions from tax law. And we've had cases before where there are parts of equipment, some parts of it are taxable and some are not. This seems like a classic case of where the General Assembly has said the die is not taxable, but whatever else is attached to it, they didn't say that expressly, obviously, but anything that's attached to it, it has to get some other, find some other means for an exemption. Was there an application here for exemption from the manufacturing? There's it's a broad exemption, or one that I'm stating broadly there, but there are exemptions for materials used in the manufacturing process. I take it that was not an issue here. In other words, a screw and barrel, you did not seek to get an exemption under that, any other section of the code. Is that right?
I'm not sure what you're referencing, perhaps in the sales tax arena. Is that what you're talking about? The used in manufacturing
sales, yeah.
Exemption?
Sales tax.
I'm quite confident that this equipment would all qualify for the exemption from sales tax because it's all being used directly in the manufacturing process. I don't think there's any dispute or would be about that. Obviously, we're not looking at sales tax concepts, but I think your question gets to the heart of the issue. What is the die? And, you know,
the die seems to me to be the piece of equipment that actually molds or forms the end product or whatever it is, and that the barrel and screw is doing what somebody, a hefty person perhaps, could do by forcing the plastic into the die.
Right. Well, I think you the The court in Timkins said we need to look at flexible definitions here. We need to look at functionality, not form. And by focusing solely on the piece at the end that actually, where the plastic actually goes through, I think it's looking at form and forgetting about the functionality of the entire unit that's operating as one unit. And it is applying pressure to form or shape a molded part, just in the way a stamping die would when it comes down and interacts with the raw material to stamp out a part.
If there's a piece of equipment that places the pellets in the screw and barrel, would that also then be part of the die?
No.
Why not?
If it's just something that's loading the plastic into the barrel?
The screw and barrel doesn't get the plastic unless this machine offers it to it.
Because I don't think there's any functionality associated with applying pressure for the item that just loads the machine, if you will.
I think
the functionality is different. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Have you finished?
Yes.
Okay. You seem to rely also on General Motors, and General Motors describes it that forms the desired metal, rubber, or plastic part when the pressure is applied by mechanical or hydraulic presses. Do you know if the mechanical or hydraulic presses were at issue in General Motors, and were they exempt?
I do not know the answer to that.
I might ask your opposing counsel.
Counsel.
Go ahead.
If I take it here that the end product produced is not affected by, the quality of it is not affected by the amount of consistent pressure being applied by this screw and barrel.
I think actually that the testimony is just to the opposite. I think the witness testified that the pressure had to be constant and even so that the tube was full, so that it all came out evenly on the other end, so that it would be affected if.
As a matter of moving the material, but only as a matter of keeping the die full, flush all the way around and all of that. It isn't a matter with these products, is it, that X pounds per square inch has to be on the product as it's forming and cooling in order to produce the quality of product that you're extruding here?
I think the only requirement is that the pressure has to be consistent and strong enough to fill the barrel.
And keep it moving.
And push. Keep in mind, it's pushing from this side, but right when it's doing that, something's coming out on this side.
Sure.
And so it has to be full in order for that to come out evenly and meet the specifications of the final product.
Counsel, would you characterize your client's machinery or what we're just describing as an advanced technique as opposed to the old-fashioned type of dies that may have been used in the past? The reason I ask that is it seems that our most recent pronouncement, Timken, is talking about the flexibility of the definition, emphasizing the function rather than form, to allow for upgrades in technology and an understanding of technology.
Yeah, I'm certainly not an expert in plastic molding, but I believe this is, if it's not an upgraded or a new technology, it's a different technology. A lot of plastics molding is done, like I said before, about gravity molds, where you're just pouring something in and letting it harden and then taking it out. And here is what we're doing is the same thing. We're molding an end plastic product. We're just doing it with a different technology. So I think the board, in looking at some of these older cases where the more traditional molding process was allowed to qualify as a die, the board said, well, to be fair, we have to allow and account for this other technology. And they are doing it differently, but at the end of the day, they are molding an end product just like a traditional molder would be doing.
And the process that you're using is advanced rather than traditional?
I would describe it as such. If you look at traditional as being just the old gravity molds that everybody used to use in making tires and glass products and things of that nature, I think this is a specialized process in the plastics area that uses what they call extrusion. And how long extrusion processing has been around, I don't know, but I think it is a different and specialized form of molding plastic goods.
Mr. Zerwanka, the other area that Mr. Hubbard went to, the first was I thought that this barrel and screw machinery did not meet the definition of a die. And you've suggested to us, if we take a look at General Motors, that it may fit that definition, if I understand your argument. Is that
correct?
And then the other position that he advanced was that the taxpayer failed to provide any estimate of the valuation or the claim exemption value here. Would you address that argument?
Absolutely. That issue, the board never got to that issue because it was never before the board. Keep in mind that the tax commissioner, if you go all the way back to the beginning, the tax commissioner determined in his final determination that there was no die. Therefore, the issue of quantifying it was irrelevant, and therefore, there was no final determination made with respect to the issue of quantification. The final determination just said this is not a die.
You agree that the burden is with the taxpayer, however.
Absolutely. But that issue was not part of the final determination issued by the tax commissioner here. Therefore, the board, it was not addressed by the board, and the board did not have jurisdiction over that issue. The sole issue that went up was, is this thing a die? And that's the sole issue that the board decided. It's the sole issue that's before the court today. And ultimately, if there is a decision that, yes, this does qualify as a die, then it's going to have to go back for some kind of an analysis on the quantification.
Thank you.
In American Book versus Porterfield, as you know, we said the die is those parts of a machine that have specially designed surfaces for imprinting or impressing special designs upon the material placed in the design of the barrel, the screw and barrel don't do that, do they?
I think, again, we need to keep in mind
they're part of the process. Your argument has to be that they're part of the process, right? They get the pellets to the die, essentially.
I think, well, absolutely they do. They're simultaneously pushing it through the barrel.
But there's no question that if you detach the barrel, the screw and barrel device from the die, that piece of equipment does not put an imprint on anything, does it?
No.
By pressure.
Until you put all the pieces together, there's not pressure there to create the final product, and I think that's what the board was saying. But the American Book case, again, if you look at that, I mean, keep in mind, they're addressing it within the context of the particular facts of a printer in that situation. But again, you need to be flexible to look at the particular manufacturing process at issue and determine, you know, what is the functionality of this equipment that's at issue. I think what we really have here is a factual determination that was made by the Board of Tax Appeals sitting as the trier of fact. And in many jigs and dies cases that this court has issued, they have said that they will defer to the fact finder in that situation so long as the board's decision is not unreasonable. We submit that the board's decision here was not unreasonable in light of the functionality of the unit as a whole, in light of the Timken pronouncement saying we need to be flexible and look at the different kinds of manufacturing processes, and in light of the prior cases granting exemptions for people who are doing more traditional or other type of molding activity. And we would ask that the board affirm on that basis.
Let me ask you one last question. Why should we not leave it to the General Assembly to tell us when technology has changed enough that the definition of a die should be changed?
Well, I think you, in effect, to some extent, have left it to the General Assembly. This exemption was put on the books in 1931 with no definitions whatsoever, and the General Assembly has not acted in that regard. We now, of course, have this tax is being phased out. There's only a couple years left of the tax, and it remains to be seen whether the General Assembly would have any interest in doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Chuanca.
Thank you.
Mr. Hubbard, you've saved just a little more than 2 minutes.
I wanted to address Justice O'Donnell's point and Justice Moyer's point about what the legal standard is under this court's case law. The Timken case, as Justice Lanziger pointed out, is the most, and I believe Justice Moyer as well, is the most recent case. It's actually a die exemption case under the personal property tax law. Another leading case is American Book, a third one, Colonial Foundry. General Motors, which is the case the board cited, was actually a sales and use tax case that involved whether items were used directly in manufacturing. And Justice Moyer was asking questions about exemptions of the sales tax law. That exemption is far broader than the die exemption at issue here. And the definition that the court was talking about in General Motors was in a much more general context than in the specific context that we have here in the personal property tax law.
Counsel, I have a specific, probably technical question to ask. The definition of die is confined to those parts of a machine that have specially designed surfaces for imprinting or impressing special designs.
That's right.
Okay. Does that include an extrusion die? Because in an extrusion die, they're not impressing. The material is passing through holes and then is either cut off or removed in some way. So the die itself is not really impressing, which to me is the stamp die, or imprinting, again, pressurized imprint. We understand that. It doesn't encompass an extrusion die.
Your Honor, actually in Timken, the court said, defined specific.
So that's the flexibility.
No. Timken said that the definition of a die is a device, and it's got to be a special purpose device, which imposes its special shape on an object. And the argument there with respect to the extruder die is those, the die holes and the die plate are forming the specific shape, and it's product specific. They change the dies every time they have a different product.
Right.
They don't change the screw and barrel assemblies one iota. It's the same barrel and screw no matter what die is in there. And Justice Lanziger, you asked that question about technology. You could go back to a textbook in 1890 and there'd be an extruder. Extruders have been around forever. And the technology that I think Mr. Shawanka was trying to be as diplomatic as he could and try to answer it most favorably to him. It's true that the various media that are extruded change over time. But the basic function of an extruder isn't any different. It's just like making spaghetti and pushing the, and making the noodles. You know, it's cylindrical and then they cut them off. It's not an advanced technology. It's very nuts and boltsy. And that is totally a red herring. If we start saying that if it's new equipment because it involves a new media, plastic, that previously wasn't formed in that way. And I think, you know, I remember the Dustin Hoffman's movie, The Graduate, where they said plastics are the new thing. I mean, if that's going to make it exempt, well, I think Justice Moyer is right. It's for the General Assembly to define exemptions, and they're narrowly construed.
On that note, your LUTs on for over a minute, Mr. Hubbard.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Counsel are excused. We have an admission ceremony following arguments here. The next item on our agenda is the admission on motion. Lawyers to the Bar of Ohio. Our procedure is as follows. I'll ask the presenters to come to the podium as I call you, and please tell us briefly why you believe the applicant you're representing would make an excellent member of the Bar of Ohio. I'd ask that the applicants please stand in place as you're being introduced so we can identify you. At the end of the presentations, I'll ask the applicants to come forward, and Justice O'Connor will administer the oath of office. The first presenter is Mark Coffey.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I present Hal David Coffey for admission to the Ohio Bar. I've known Hal Coffey for all his life. He's my younger brother, and I can vouch for his character, both as an individual and also as a professional. He's been highly lauded by his peers and his law firm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's an outstanding young attorney and be a great addition to the Ohio Bar.
Thank you. Jeffrey Finley.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm here to present James R. Davis for admission to State Bar of Ohio. I've known James. We grew up as childhood friends about a mile apart. We graduated high school together. I can vouch for his character. I think that his character and fitness is more than appropriate to be admitted to the Bar of the State of Ohio. He is currently licensed practicing law in the state of Texas, which he is in good standing. I would ask the court to admit him to our bar. I think it'll be a credit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alec Whiteman.
Good morning. I'm Alec Whiteman from Baker Hostetler, and I'm pleased to present Brian Hufford. Brian is a member of the Bar of the State of New York, got his undergraduate and master's degree at Wichita State and his law degree at Yale Law School, and has come to Ohio with his wife, who is the new head of litigation at Cardinal Health, and I can say he's obviously qualified to be a member of the Ohio Bar, among other things, because two active practitioners have 8 children. So I'm pleased to present him.
Thank you. Is there a motion that the applicants be admitted to the Bar of Ohio?
So moved.
Is there any objection? Motion is adopted. The applicants will please come forward and stop at the first step, please. Justice O'Connor.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm going to ask you to raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Brian Hufford.
Hereby swear.
Hereby swear.
That I will support the Constitution and laws of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution and laws of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws of Ohio.
And the Constitution and laws of Ohio.
And I will abide by the Ohio rules of professional conduct.
And I will abide by the Ohio rules of professional conduct.
In my capacity as an attorney,
in my capacity as an attorney,
an officer of the court,
and an officer of the court,
I will conduct myself with dignity and civility.
I will conduct myself with dignity and civility.
And show respect,
and show respect,
towards judges,
towards judges,
court staff,
court staff,
clients,
clients,
fellow professionals,
fellow professionals,
and all other persons,
and all other persons.
I will honestly, faithfully and competently,
I will honestly, faithfully and competently,
discharge the duties of an attorney at law.
Discharge the duties of an attorney at law.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the court and the Bar of Ohio to the Bar of Ohio. We have a very strong bar. We're proud of our bar, and we hope it's better now that you are members. Congratulations. Good luck.
Thank you.
Marshal, please adjourn court.